From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 456, Patching Windows Clusters with guest Luke Swords, recorded Monday, December 14th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Luke Swords, who is a principal consultant at InFront Consulting Group, a Microsoft Gold certified global partner. Luke has extensive experience with System Center Configuration Manager, System Center Automation, and is also a program manager for OPAS, a patch automation tool from InFront. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. Glad to be on the show.
Well, and it's one of these topics that never, ever goes away because, you know, there's so many different ways to try and keep machines up to date. And as near as I could tell, Microsoft's been telling us now, as long as you're running Windows 10, you don't have to worry about it anymore. It's all automated for you.
Right. Well, there's another half of that story, of course, is that your server patching also has to be fixed. And that is really the time consuming part of it. On the client side and Windows 10 and what they're introducing with Windows 10, it's very much deploy the patches, reboot them and you're fine. But on your server side, you have a lot more variables to consider. You have the fact that you've got key applications running it. You're running clusters. You're running applications with dependencies on other dependencies, and they need to be patched in a certain order.
Yeah.
And you also have the challenge that once you've patched the box and you've rebooted it, that how do you know you haven't broken anything? So that is a challenge that a lot of the IT departments are facing today.
Well, flatly admit, I've certainly seen this already in Win 10 for the few months that it's been out. We still have to reboot on a regular basis. Like this, that dream of the no reboot patch, it's a dream.
Right, exactly. And not only is it the no reboot dream still far away, but you're still having the multiple reboots as well.
Yeah.
So if you're deploying a number of .NET patches, for example, you'll reboot. And then say, for example, you've deployed your patches for a weekend and then you check your compliance reports on Monday and you see that three haven't installed. And what happened here? So you then have another reboot and then you find that, oh, there you go, that they're now compliant. I just needed that second reboot. So that is a challenge as well.
You just haven't rebooted enough.
Exactly.
And there's the whole other aspect of, you know, testing patches in isolation before you put them out into the field as well. Although, again, I think there's a lot of pressure coming from Microsoft, especially saying, no, we've got this nailed now. Don't worry. You want all the patches.
Right. Exactly. There's no real excuse for not testing because although Microsoft will have tested it, you know, with their vanilla set of applications, you obviously need to test in your own environments. And there's no getting away from the fact that you have to run your patches through dev. You have to run it through QA. You have to then, you know, pick your pilot groups and you still have to do it in an ordered manner. And there's no shortcuts to that.
No. But I'll tell you this. Running my own Exchange server, because, you know, I like to be afraid all the time. updating 2010 was hairy, right? In the 2010 timeframe, there were some hotfixes out there that broke things. Like, you better test this or you're going to get your butt kicked. 2013 has been much, much smoother. There is no patch I've had in 2013. Of course, 2016 is out now, so I'm looking at when am I going to do my upgrade. There has been no update to 2013 that it needed to be rolled back in my experience. So, I mean, clearly somebody's doing something better.
Right. And that's certainly in our experience of our customers as well, that they do have a better experience with 2013. And what Microsoft and they introduced in 2010 was there are some maintenance scripts to help you with your patching.
Right.
So when you're running your large scale, DAGs, 12, 16 nodes, that takes a lot of time to patch over a weekend. And we've even had some customers said literally our production DAG takes us the entire weekend to patch.
Wow.
And that is even using some of their own built-in automation and using the support scripts that Microsoft provide, because you have to put each server into maintenance mode. You have to fail it over. You have to drain the message queues. You know, there's a lot of steps. There's scripts to help with that, but no real one solution that ties it all together so you can do a full end-to-end patching.
Maybe this is what we should focus in on, is just the clustering side of this. Because it's one thing to patch regular servers, but as soon as you're talking about DAGs or SQL Server clusters or anywhere where there's a group of machines that are supposed to be symmetrical,
right,
and you need to patch them. I mean, you can't take the whole thing down and patch it all and light it back up. You need continuous uptime. So,
right,
you know, how do you piecemeal this out? Take down half? I mean, I come from the web performance background where we wrote our own rolling update scripts, and it was development involved and operations involved. Like, everybody had to be on deck as we did a rolling update like that.
Right. And it's even more so because the sheer fact that they're a cluster, they're mm-hmm. much more important than anything else.
Yeah. You clustered them for a reason.
Right. Exactly. And so there is that reluctance that I don't really want to automate this end to end because I either haven't made the investment to make sure that I have confidence that it will work. And also, well, it's a cluster and I'm here for the evening, for the night or the weekend, whatever it is. So I may as well do it manually to make sure it's done right. But yeah, when you extrapolate that out and you have 10 clusters to do, 20 clusters to do, you never get to the end of that. You're spending every weekend patching those clusters manually.
No, you're painting the Golden Gate Bridge. By the time you get to one end of the bridge, it's time to start back at the other end.
Absolutely, yeah. And then you also have the extra pressures that, well, are we compliant yet? Well, I'm compliant on my dev clusters. I haven't reached production yet. And then you're starting over again before you know it.
You would think this would be easier because anybody running that scale, I mean, this is a big customer. This is big money. And I get, you know, I find it funny. And maybe this is just a sea change that's happening. This idea that no, we're safer because this is manual, because every iota of my being these days says the safer solution is the automated solution because it's scripted, because it's repeatable, because I know exactly what happened. The fact that somebody's going to go in there with a wrench and hack their way through, that just scares the snot out of me.
Right. And the IT departments that we've worked at, they will have a manual list of checks that they have to perform.
Right.
So they know that they are doing it. But when they're doing it, they're probably using Excel and they have little check boxes.
Yeah, this is what scares me. And I like the idea of gates, right? That it's automated to a point. It stops at a gate. Somebody actually puts eyes on it for a moment, says, yes, it should be here, here, and here. Okay, you know, go through the gate. Automation continues.
Right, exactly. And I think they did try to introduce some of that with the cluster aware updating feature of 2012. But the issue with that is that not everybody is running 2012 clusters in their environment. I'm still seeing a huge amount of Server 2008 R2 clusters. And so for that, there is no automated solution unless you're going to build it yourself. And even if you're running the Exchange DAGs, they still require the extra automation end to end.
Now, if you've got, I mean, isn't there a good argument to be said before you roll your own, like you're better off moving up to 2012 R2 and using the built-in tools?
Well, I think if that was every IT department's decision that they would make that. But
yeah,
you have these business pressures to say, we're not ready to move our cluster off that yet. You know,
people are afraid of their clusters. I mean, I don't know if you've had that experience, but it's like once it's up and running, you're just scared to death of it.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And it's not something that they want to, you know, put a huge amount of time and money into, because
right,
the business is saying that it's working and we don't have the budget for this yet. It has to wait till next year, and then next year never comes. And 5 years down the line, you're still running 2008 R2. So it's, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, this is very much a DevOps conversation about how do we make it visible to management the risk and labor involved in manually updating a lot of this stuff. Like you're way better off moving to as much automation as you can around these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key with the management story is, well, I'm paying my guys anyway
right,
to be there at the weekends. So they may as well do it. But it's really a false economy, is mm-hmm. that although you're spending the money for the guys to do it, patching it, you're still at risk because they're doing it manually.
Yeah. And when you're doing it manually, you're only going to get so many working hours out of them. It only costs so much. There are better things they could be doing.
Right.
You know, this whole idea that automation is going to take away IT people's job, it's insane. There's so much to do. You could be providing so much more value to your organization than standing over an Excel document, clicking on buttons to walk through a script.
Right. And it's moving your workforce out of the operational side of things and into the projects and working through that list of projects that have to get done, but never really seem to get done.
Yeah. It's like they've been ignored for so long. You've forgotten that list even exists.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. And so now if I am a 2012 R2, is this problem solved with cluster aware updating? Cause I just wouldn't believe you if you said yes.
Well, not really. It's because there are integrations and plugins you can use. So for Windows Update,
okay,
and also for SCCM, but the key is that you just stage your patches to them, and there is a cost and overhead in setting up the cluster aware sure. updating. There is some lessons that you have to be learned, and so if you do want to test it, you'll then have to stand up your test and dev clusters, run through that. And then if you have the Exchange stuff as well, you're still not fully automated because right. you need to take into account that it's an Exchange DAG. Although running on a Windows failover cluster, it's still a different beast.
And we are talking about this is an on-prem set of issues because I'll tell you, my customers in the cloud, especially when we're doing website updates now, we don't update anything. We just build another infrastructure in the new version and we swap the workload over. And then we kill the old VMs.
And that's obviously the ideal, and that's obviously where Microsoft want to move you towards.
Is sure.
It's the cloud.
But when you talk about something like Exchange or SQL Server, like this is just not possible, right? Like it doesn't work that way.
No, absolutely not. And I think what the key is a lot of customers, if they're not just their clusters, it's their applications, and they're not really, you know, cloud ready to as such. If they move the applications up to the cloud and they move to like a continuous build
yeah.
Model, then they have to know that they have the automation behind it to, you know, build up their environment and tear it down and then do it over and over again. And again, that's a significant investment that people have to make. When I go into my large customers, you know, the banks, the insurance companies, they have literally thousands of applications. So those thousands of applications are not going to move to the cloud overnight. It'll take a monumental effort to move all of those applications up to the cloud where you can have that sort of continuous delivery model. So these sort of old style legacy applications, if you want to call them that, are going to be around for a long time. And so you need to rely on the traditional forms of patching to fix that problem. We just need to overlay a lot more automation onto it.
Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't help that there's such a shopping list of products here. I mean, Update Server was supposed to be a solution. Configuration Manager, for a long time, I looked at it as primarily, you know, for new hardware. Like here's how we put our standard templates on machines. But I see people using SCCM. And what's the tool underlying that? Is it the Microsoft Deployment Toolbox is underneath that. They all seem to be overlapping in this role of update.
Right. So for SCCM, it is relying on WSUS underneath. So
right.
when you want to integrate software updates or patching with SCCM, you still need to stand up a WSUS server. Once you install SCCM, it then will take over the management of that WSUS server. But you're absolutely right. It's still using WSUS under the hoods and that same core technology.
Now, WSUS and Windows Deployment Toolkit, though the free tools, SCCM is clearly not a free tool.
Right.
Although most people I meet who are actually using it, it's not a trivial tool to get involved in either. It's part of a volume license agreement. I don't think people generally go out and buy System Center. They have it as part of an overall agreement with Microsoft, and they just have to actually take advantage of what they own.
Right. So if you're trying to do any sort of patching en masse to mm-hmm. a huge volume.
When you say mass, how many are you talking about? Like, what point is this like, is it 1,000 servers and it's just not optional? You have to manage this automated?
Yeah, I think anything from the server side of things, if you have 250 plus servers in your environment, then you really probably should be looking at an enterprise tool to manage that.
Yeah.
Not just for the fact that you need to deploy the tools, but you need that extra level of reporting to make sure that you're compliant, because compliance is obviously a huge issue as well with these systems.
Yeah, these, just the scope of knowing what you even did, the log files are massive.
Right.
Luke, give me 1 second to pay the bills, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the fighters of configuration drift. Configuration drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. ScriptRock will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. And now with the latest update, ScriptRock provides vulnerability scanning on all your nodes at no additional cost. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. All right, let's dig into the meat of this thing. Right? I think we've scared everybody. Updating is hard. So what are the right things to do? Is SCCM the tool still, if you got it in your field, like this is the right way to go?
I think it's certainly the best option at the moment if you do want to look at an enterprise class tool, because not only does it give you the granularity that you need moving all your servers into collections, is that you then assign maintenance windows to all those collections. So essentially you would, you know, classify these my dev servers and they go 4 days after patch Tuesday. You would put them all into one collection. You assign your maintenance window and you have your deployment targeted at right. those servers. But in terms of patching across whatever tool you use is still using the same basic process. So you decide the patches to install, they get deployed to the servers, they reach a deadline, they install the patches, and they reboot. And then as far as SCCM or any sort of patch tool is concerned, it's done. I've done my install, and I've done my single reboot.
Right.
Now go and check your reports.
And this is where you find out you needed a second reboot.
Right, exactly. Yes.
So Pareto's law applies, like 80% of the time that's just going to work, and 20% of the time it's not.
Right. And then for that remaining 20%, you're then spending 80% of your time
yes.
either fixing them or patching them manually. Because even if it's not in a cluster, it may have some idiosyncrasies to say, you need to shut down this service first or
right.
shut down the application or do something before you patch. And so they then go into the manual bucket.
Yeah. The manual bucket, just these days, it's like if you open a Word doc, you failed. You know, I'm getting more and more keen on this has got to be automated end to end. It's just a question of, is it really make sense to be automated if it only happens once?
Right.
And there's no repeatable solution.
Yes. And some of the updates or the manual steps that you're performing, when I ask the customers, why are you doing this? Well, our SQL server needs to be patched before our web server.
Yes.
And that might be the only reason to do it. And so the solution within SCCM, or one of the ways you can handle that in SCCM, is that, well, I'll put my SQL box in a maintenance window that's, say, midnight to 4 a.m. And then I'll put my web server in a maintenance window that's 4 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Right.
But then essentially you've created an 8-hour outage for your application because your application could go down twice within 8 hours.
Sure.
And I worked with one customer, and they were they ran hospitals, and so, you know, we suggested the solution. They said, "We can't have that. Our nurses use our applications 24/7.
Yeah,
we need to be able to tell them it's going down, but only for half an hour during that time." And that's where you need the extra level of orchestration to say, patch that server, and then they reboot, and then the actual outage is really just the reboot time, but. In the traditional sense of using the maintenance windows to split it up, it's much harder to say when that reboot time would be.
How long that's actually going to be. And just because you rebooted a server doesn't mean it immediately comes back up either, right? I mean, Exchange has a good long think after a reboot about just how happy it is with its DAG and so forth. And SQL Server too. You know, sometimes those things just take some time to come back to life.
Right. And some IT guys, so, you know, if there's a problem on Monday morning, they'll say, well, what did you do to make sure everything was fine? Well, I logged on and I checked, I could send mail, and then you'll find out that they're on an Exchange server that didn't get patched that weekend. So again, you're relying on those manual checks to make sure everything was healthy, but they're not perfect.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's like, this is the problem with manual checks, right? I actually want a full regression test. Like, there's a real set of tests that need to be done here to know everything's running. But we also, you know, from a cluster perspective, is this, why am I down at all? You know, if this is actually a 24/7 app, or in my case, dealing with e-commerce, is this is something that makes money every second of every day, where every second of outage represents dollars lost. I need to be able to patch without ever being down.
Right. Exactly. And I think, In that situation, then you put more and more money into your clusters. You may put extra nodes on there to handle the load. And as you do that, you're just adding to the complexity of the cluster. And again, it comes down to that care and feeding that. I have a script, but because you're dealing with IT pros here, you're not dealing with developers who Right. can run complicated scripts that can handle every scenario. They have logging, they have error control. That sort of stuff is actually hard to do for an IT pro to do it.
Although I think the demand for us to do it is going up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're expected this kind of stage deployment. Like you talk about, got to patch a database before the web server. I'm finding now it's, you have to make modifications to the database, deploy the new version of the website, and then make more modifications to the database post application update.
Yes. And so that's where you need your tight integration to your dev teams, and the whole DevOps story just, you know, keeps on growing there, because that's where you learn the knowledge. Well, how do I deploy this, and how do I set it up to make sure it's healthy?
Right.
So you're relying on your devs to do that, and to help you build the end-to-end automation that sort of thing requires.
Now, Orchestrator is part of the System Center suite. I've usually looked at Orchestrator as, this is a way for us to build a script for how we provision a new user and things like that. But can you go down the path of a multi-stepped update, or, you know, and a hierarchical update in Orchestrator?
You can, yes. And sort of, certainly in my experience, Orchestrator is really the entry point
right
to automation in a department where you might not have that script god who's going to just, you know, write out all the scripts for you. So people will start to use Orchestrator. There are sample runbooks out there of how to, you know, patch a cluster, how to move nodes in and out of maintenance mode, and then move on to the next one. But once people start to use Orchestrator, they start to realize that it's still a comparatively old product compared to, SMA and Azure Automation and the new automation offerings by Microsoft. And you start to hit some of the roadblocks that Orchestrator can have. We had one example where we built a whole load of automation within Orchestrator, and we were using PowerShell to kick off multiple PowerShell scripts.
Right.
And then we found that we were hitting the performance problems, because Orchestrator is still a 32-bit application. It still has a number of challenges. And then you realize that I'm actually writing my whole Orchestrator runbooks is just really a whole series of PowerShell scripts anyway. So,
but I mean, that's fine. It's just that those things need care and feeding too, right? Like one of the challenges I'm dealing with now in organizations where PowerShell is becoming, you know, God, this is how all things are done, is they need source control. They need a central repository. For a long time, scripts were the domain of the individual creator. You know, they weren't shared in any way. And actually, you know, growing that side of your organization up is not a small thing to do if you're going to take PowerShell that seriously.
No, and you hit on a really good point there in terms of source control with Orchestrator. And there is no perfect tool where you can grab your runbooks and check them into source control right. And then check them out again. You can grab the PowerShell scripts and put them into source control and put them out again. But then you're going through this multi-tiered step to copy the PowerShell script out of Orchestrator to put it into your source control. It's not a great story of how you manage source control within Orchestrator itself. And so then you think, well, what other options do I have?
And you'd think that the new version coming up would deal with more of this, right? There is a 2016 edition of System Center coming.
There is. And I haven't looked at Orchestrator yet, but I'm not expecting a huge overhaul in Orchestrator. And I think Microsoft are likely including Orchestrator in 2016 because so many customers are still using it. And so many people have already, you know, built a whole load of automation on top of it. And I think Microsoft are demonstrating that we haven't forgotten you yet.
Right.
So that's why it's been included.
I would hope they haven't forgotten us, period.
No. Right?
I mean, generally, no. They've been pretty good about backward compatibility. They tend not to abandon stuff and abandon us, the folks that have put a lot of time into these things. But, you know, here's to hoping. Because I think we are feeling like there's a sea change here about the way that we manage our updates and our scripting and so forth. And I'm hoping that, you know, Microsoft will keep up and build tools that will do that as well. You know, I'm doing shows with the chef guys who are just thinking about deployment and updating in a very different way with their recipe approach to things. Although much more cloud centric. And it, you know, and you think Microsoft getting more cloud centric too. I thought System Center 2016 was going to be the cloud centric version where we're taking all this knowledge of what we've done in the cloud and bringing it on prem so that we should be able to do these things.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what they do there. I think certainly from an SCCM perspective, it's Windows 10 is very much a focus of Windows 10 of SCCM.
Right.
There is some nod towards the server side patching, so they have included some ability to patch clusters. But it's still early days. Well, it's not early days. It's due for GA very soon. But when I last checked on TP4 is that they had put some rudimentary support for patching of clusters, but not all the features were there yet. So we're sort of holding your breath to see what they provide there.
I feel, you know, until Windows 2016 is more stable and we know exactly what clustering is going to look like in the later edition, I can't think those guys are going to be able to build tooling around that yet. So it's got to come out after Server 2016 is done. I just presumably just because, you know, what are you going to build against?
Right. And some of the conversations I've had with Microsoft is that the support for clustering within 2016 is not going to be dependent on the cluster aware patching feature of 2012.
Which means they're going a different direction again.
Well, I think it's more so that they're looking to say, well, we haven't forgotten our 2008 R2 customers. So even though it's a 7-year-old or a 5-year-old operating system, is that we will provide some support for that. But it'll be interesting to see what the uptake is on that, because it's still going to be sort of a V1 release of that feature. So there's going to be challenges with that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So tell me a bit about OPAS, because this is clearly a big, you know, part of your day. This is a product you guys are building to deal with the orchestrated patching?
Right. So when we've gone into customers, we have listened to basically the whole story we've just had. And people say, we're still struggling with patching. We're still struggling with automation of our patching of clusters, of Exchange DAGs. And so that's the patching side of things. But we're also struggling with the fact that we need to run through some manual steps in order to achieve our patching. And we also then have to figure out, did anything break post-patching? So this is the idea of application validation post-patching. And how do you make sure that your application is healthy, seeing you've just brought the whole environment down again and you've brought it back up again? It needs to be functional for Monday morning.
Right.
And so what we have provided is the ability to do end-to-end automation patching of Exchange DAGs, of Windows failover clusters, including your SQL clusters. So, and that's from 2008, R2, and above. And we also, what we realized, we looked at some of the common problems with patching, and we realized that some of them were just some basic steps that were missing. And so we have a number of built-in pre-flight checks to make sure that our patching is going to be successful. So, for example, we check for disk space. We check that the key services are running. We check to make sure that the quorum is healthy. And even if you've got, say, a 5-node DAG, but only 2 nodes are available, then you may not be able to maintain quorum if you keep swapping nodes in and out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you should deal with that problem first. I like the fact that you'd have a tool to go, hey, you know, you've got an unhappy DAG. I don't think you should be patching this right now.
Exactly. And that's something that you want to know up front rather than on Monday morning.
Yeah, that's what it, rather than after you start taking it apart because you're trying to patch it, you're making the situation worse.
Right. Exactly. Some of the challenges around not just the patching, but the application validation. So if you look at the multi-tier application, you know, the example we talked about before, that SQL must be patched first and then our application tier and then the web tier. But before you patch the web tier, I want to run an IIS reset, or I want to stop the web services.
Right. Or any other service.
Exactly. Or any other service. And so you can, with OPAS, you can perform those tasks in a very specific order. You can say, I want to run this task pre-patch, or I want to post-patch, or post-reboot, or pre-reboot. It's very flexible in exactly when you want to run those steps. So one of the common examples you want to see is that I'm patching all my domain controllers. When you're patching domain controllers, you don't bring them down all at the same time, because then you've got problems. And so with OPAS, we can specify them in an application group, and we can step through the patching of those domain controllers one at a time. And then at the end, we can say, well, let's check our Kerberos port. Is that accessible? And let's check the net logon service to that. That's accessible.
I mean, the main thing I would want is that I take down, I patch a domain server, I restart it, and before I patch the next one, I make sure the first one's up, running, and healthy.
Yes, exactly. Because you don't, and this is similar to your, when we're patching our clusters, if we're patching the first node in our cluster and we fail on a patch, then we stop patching.
Right.
We don't want to kill every single node.
Yeah, let's go break all of them.
Right. Right. So you need that level of automation and those decisions made for you, because if sometimes you leave it up to a human, they'll make the wrong decision. Sure. So those sort of predefined rules are built into the automation to make sure you're successful.
Awesome. So where can folks find OPAS?
So they can go to our website, infoconsulting.com/OPAS. We've got a couple of videos up there. We're seeing a huge amount in uptake in not just of people using it for their automation, but also helping with their QA as well. Because in order to make sure you go through dev and QA and you're ready for production, change control want to see that you've run some tests to make sure that it's successful and it's healthy. So it helps automate that as well.
Great. Hey, Luke, thanks so much for coming on the show. Very cool stuff.
Great. Thank you very much.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.